Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and I am so pleased to be able to have our guest today on the show with me. This is a man who has accomplished a great deal with art, has had an impact on literally millions of people through so many different mediums of his artistic expression, and we're going to be hearing some very, very special, touching stories. What difference does art make in life? It's phenomenal. When you look around, you will be amazed at how much art that you don't even think twice about is in place around you that makes your life richer because someone has given a piece of themselves in their creativeness to make our visuals bigger, brighter, better. Whether you're looking at a can of food in the grocery store, watching television, reading a book, it doesn't make any difference. It's everywhere. I want to welcome to the airwaves John Paul Thornton. His book is Art and Courage. He's put together stories that are to inspire the artist warrior within. John Paul, welcome to the show.
Oh, Donna, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to talk with you today.
I'll tell you, when I first found out about your book, and then I called you saying I wanted to have a copy so that I could read it, little was I aware of the fact that you have had such an incredible artistic background. You, as an artist, made a choice that you wanted to dedicate yourself to celebrating the human spirit, and you teach art to underprivileged children, and then you found out that one of your students was missing, and you decided you were going to do a series of paintings depicting the faces of America's missing children, and all of us have seen many of those faces on milk cartons and in so many different places, in stores, etc. But what is amazing is that you just didn't do a few. You did hundreds, and they've been exhibited in the National Mall in front of the White House at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C.
Yes, yes.
You've also done projects for the United Nations Environmental Program, and your art has been displayed at the Nobel Peace Center in Oslo, Norway, during World Environment Day. You've gotten honors from CBS Television, the California State Senate, and the United States Congress for your art touching the hearts and minds of people because of the message that it conveys. You've got quite a background. You've traveled all over the world. Did you, when you started out as an artist, ever dream that your work would have such a powerful impact?
Oh, no. You know, I think that when children become aware of art making, it's something we do out of fun, and, you know, we do it because we enjoy it. Occasionally, teenagers find themselves the last person standing amongst their peer group who still enjoys art, and they begin to follow the career of an artist, and that's a career that is always filled with change, and usually a career or a path that's a very lonely one, an isolated one, because we feel that artists have to spend a lot of time either practicing or working alone. You know, even actors, musicians find themselves, you know, feeling somewhat isolated. There's a feeling that artists are removed from the rest of culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as you said in the intro so well, art is all around us. Everything we see was somebody's vision. It was somebody's creative idea, whether it's an old road out in the middle of the desert or a shoe design that we're wearing. You know, of course, when we go to museums and listen to the radio, that's obvious. But it's the art that springs from us as a culture daily that tends to be overlooked. And I had no idea when I was starting off as a young artist that my art would take me to such really fascinating places. And I'm so honored to have been kind of led by art to be able to meet and to touch so many people.
You talk about in your book the experience of the beginning of the journey that you had relative to painting the faces of missing children. Mm-hmm. And there was a professor in college that told you that portraiture is old-fashioned, and where in the world, why he would even be teaching art with that kind of an attitude is beyond me, because it is the expression of portraiture. That when someone can do it and do it well, there is an impact that is incredible, and that is what your cover is on your book. It's one of the missing children, isn't it?
That's right. The cover of my book features actually a painting I made of a flyer depicting the age progression face of a little missing boy named Eaton Patz. And he was one of the original children who was featured on the milk carton program when it began back in the 80s. You know, when I started painting missing children, it was a response to a real-life situation. I had a student who was reported as missing, and I realized when I got home that day, after feeling, you know, very emotionally affected by this, by hearing this news, I opened up my mailbox and coincidentally found a flyer of another missing child, one of the thousands of missing children in America. And this little flyer, you know, it reminded me that I'd been throwing these images away. I'd been not really looking at this issue as something that I wanted to embrace. It was frightening. It was sad, but I couldn't throw that image. I couldn't throw it away. I was changed, and it was because I had a connection. And I realized then that all of us are changed when we have a personal connection to something. That's a fact. You know, we might go through life feeling apathetic or mildly sympathetic towards an issue or a person or a place. But until we have a little bridge created, we're not fully invested. And I realized that portraiture is a way that we've been able to become invested in each other for centuries. Portraiture in art, in photography, you know, when we watch the daily news on television, there's a big talking head that we can focus on. It's the human face that has so much meaning. And, you know, Donna, I realized that if I had a connection to this little card that suddenly caused me to look at it a little more, to look possibly at the face of this missing child, what if other people could experience a connection as well? And that's why I began painting these portraits of missing children.
Well, that's just the beginning of the story.
Yeah, that's just the beginning.
You started painting these portraits. And then you made the decision that you wanted to put them on display. Now, this was risky because you had done how many for that first display? How many had you done?
Well, for the first time I showed them to anyone, I had 30 of them, and I had just started painting them. When I started to really show them publicly, I had about 250 portraits of missing children.
Now, your first exhibition was at the Los Angeles Museum of Art?
Correct.
Out in front.
Yeah, I had a vision that instead of relying on a gallery or instead of relying on walls, what if I could get the paintings out into a public place where no one expected them? And the easiest way to do that was to forego walls entirely, just to have people hold these paintings, have hundreds of people hold the paintings in a group. And you know, it really connected not only the participants to these paintings, but then volunteers could speak to the public while they're holding these paintings. It became the beginning of a community of people who wanted to open their eyes, maybe to ask questions about this issue, and to feel a kind of human, not just sympathy, but a kind of connection to these children.
Then after you did that in Los Angeles, you had an overwhelming response. There were people who wanted you on their shows, television and radio both. And then you got a call from the president of the California branch of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Yes.
And it was because of her that she wanted you to be a part of the meeting at their National Center headquarters in Virginia and it came up that you were going to be presenting this same exhibition at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. on National Missing Children's Day.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, this is a great lesson. It was a great lesson for me, and it was a great lesson for all the people around me, and hopefully everyone listening today. When I was asked to go back to Alexandria, Virginia, to meet with the people at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, I had no idea what I was going to do. I was quite intimidated. You know, I was speaking now with people who were, you know, really in the business of locating missing children in a real nuts and bolts way in terms of forensics and crime solving. And here I was, a painter, coming out and showing paintings. But something about the paintings was different than anything that they had seen. And I got to tell you, they asked me, John Paul, what are you going to do with these paintings? And I'm on the spot. I kind of made it up. I said, well, I have a vision of these paintings being shown at the Lincoln Memorial. And they said, great, we'll support that. How much do you need to ship the paintings out? How can we get your team of people out here? And it was a beautiful lesson that the inspiration of the moment seized me, and I threw it out on the table, and they trusted me enough to fulfill that exhibition for them. So it was
the exhibition was just amazing because you had there was a video crew that was there. I mean, this was big time.
Sure.
This was something that was really big time. And so you had assistance there, and then you thought, like so many of us would have the same feeling, I'm totally nuts. What am I doing this for?
Do
I have any brains? What if this thing fails? Well, your wife apparently is an absolutely incredible organizer.
Yes, she is.
So between her and the other people that were volunteering, everything gets together. And then it's raining on that day. And so here you are with all these paintings. But to your amazement, you didn't know if one person was going to turn out or five. Or 500, but a tour bus pulled up 80 teenagers. Imagine this, folks. 80 teenagers drove in from Texas, and they see all these pictures. Tell us what happened with those teenagers.
Well, it's an amazing thing to reach anybody, especially teenagers, because teenagers have this amazing sense of being a little mistrusting and dubious of anything. That's what's so great about them. But I had these paintings posted along pylons in front of the White House, all up and down the street, hundreds of them. And these kids would come in tour groups, and they would take a photograph of the White House, and then they would invariably see these paintings and say, "What are these paintings doing here?" They'd get close enough to see that, wow, these are paintings of missing children, and they wanted to know who did them. I did them, I told them. And then I asked them a question. I just said, would you like to hold a painting of a missing child over your heart? And it broke the ice. And one after another, these kids picked up a painting, held it to their heart, and then they could read the inscription on the painting. They could understand that they were holding a painting of a missing child. They could compare paintings, compare information, and this amazing bunch of kids broke into prayer. And it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life. It was a spontaneous thing for them. This was a ragtag bunch of teens on a spring vacation. And I realized that in a very humble way that these paintings of these incredible children that I had made to honor their faces had a way of bringing people together, whether they were young or old, regardless of their political persuasion or their ethnic background. Missing children were a way of bringing people together in this kind of shared community of conversation, of prayer, and then discussions about action. How could they take action in their own communities to do something, in their words, something cool like this? How could we do something cool like this? And this changed my life as an artist. Because sometimes as an artist, we think that our job is to make something, you know, make that can of soup, make that that painting, write that book. What's more amazing is to create a piece of artwork that causes other people to to realize that they have to do something now too. Mm-hmm. It's like a game of tag. Tag, you're it. You held this painting of a missing girl who you never knew, and you're already starting to think, well, you know, that this is cool. What cool thing could we do? And for me, this changed the entire nature of what I was doing as an artist. It wasn't just to present my work. It was to provoke other people to create something meaningful in their lives.
Your book is filled with stories, and just to make mention, at the Lincoln Memorial, when you put the paintings all on the steps, I've been at the Lincoln Memorial, and I know how many thousands and thousands of people go out to just, it's such a powerful, powerful place.
Yeah, it's an amazing place, yeah.
And they were coming out. The weather was bad, the choir canceled, the politicians didn't show up. I mean, everybody that was supposed to be there that were the hoo-has and the rah-rahs, they didn't show up. But you had thousands of people that looked at these pictures that you had painted, that they're so real. I mean, the cover of your book, the eyes of the little boy, the brilliant blues, the features, all of this conveyed with such clarity that they would go up to the paintings and would touch them, and that was okay. And one of the teenagers even said, nobody allows us to touch anything. When we go to a museum, you can't touch anything. Hands
off. That's right. That's right. Well,
and this was very interactive. This was very soul-touching for a lot of people.
Well, I wanted to break that barrier, and it's true. Usually people are not encouraged to touch a painting. You know, you go to a museum, and, of course, you know, guards yell at you and bells and whistles go off. To have people hold these paintings, you know, to get their fingerprints on them and get their sweat on them, it made them, I think, even more of a sacred image, more of a sacred connection. And yeah, to have people by the thousands view these paintings quietly on their own, without the distraction of some of these other guest speakers and other performers that I had planned, was another great lesson, and I'll never forget it. And the lesson is, keep it simple. You know, especially at this point in time, we're surrounded by so much technology and so much noise and so much information. One of the most beautiful things that art can do is the opposite of entertain, the opposite of bedazzle. You know, one of the most beautiful things art can do is to create a sense of quiet. So it made sense that these paintings could stand alone.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, as I said, at this point in time, at this point in history, wow, you really want to do something amazing, do it as quietly and as honestly as you can, and people are going to be drawn to it.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how that happens. It really is something when you can just keep your own presence and allow that there is that, for the lack of a better word, that energy that will fill its own space and will beckon to those that will be prepared to enter into that space with you. And that is what your artwork did. Now, your book, Art and Courage, is filled with stories, and you have some wonderful quotes in here. And I like this one. The artist's vocation is to send light into the human heart. And I so agree with that. I just think that there are so many stories. That's why art is so significant. I have done interviews with some other artists. One is a Japanese lady. Her name escapes me right now. But the first time I saw her art, I said, holy Joseph, I just couldn't stand to look at this thing because there was so much in it. Well, I learned her story. And she was telling the story of survival of Hiroshima. She was a little girl. Then I could look at that art differently. Then I could see exactly what I had perceived, which was horrific pain, horrific suffering, and this woman in her own culture was an outcast. Today, she's revered because there are those people that see what she was telling in her own form of story. And that's what I think is so miraculous about art. It really, that's what makes many people's work stand out so much, because they put a piece of themselves in what they do. And that's what you did. And you're very intuitive. You talk about how intuitively you were painting the portraits of these children, this was something that just flowed with you. It's like you identified with each child, and you were telling their story.
I've been so affected because I've looked at 2 decades of creating these missing children. I've been doing it for almost 20 years now, and I work on it, you know, constantly. I do many other projects. I paint many other things, but always this body of work keeps coming back to me. And at whose portrait should I stop? Because mm-hmm. we still in America have cases of missing children. There were just a few in the news this morning. Some that are being solved, some that are still open. It's an ongoing thing in America. It's a larger issue once you leave America's borders. It's something that is very tragic, obviously, and very sad. But what I wanted to do with it in terms of a project was to just remind people of the dignity of humanity, just the dignity of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did something this May, which isn't in my book, but it was the extension of this project. You know, Donna, every year I like to do something with these paintings. I have an exhibition. I show them in some way. This year, what I did is I put the word out on a couple of artist internet sites, and I said, who would like to be a guardian angel? Who would like to take a painting of mine in their home and do something with it for the week of Missing Children's Day? So a volunteer would call me and say, well, you know, I live in Charleston, Carolina, and I would say, well, great. I found a case. I'm going to paint a portrait of a missing child from your city, and I'm going to mail it to you. And then your responsibility as a participant is to find a meaningful way to display this painting. And I did this all across America. I had hundreds of people participating. Some of the ideas people were coming up with were fascinating to me. I had children simply taking them to school and arranging with their principal some kind of an event. I had one couple drive a painting of a little girl across the United States in their car, stopping at restaurants, at rest stops, at tourist spots, and displaying this painting, talking to people about her case, talking to people about child safety. I had one couple in Texas approach the father of the little girl who they were representing and deliver the painting to him and just give it to him as a gift, letting him know that the people of America were thinking about him and thinking about the loss of his daughter. I get great joy from this because it, to me, again, it's the painting to me is my little piece of it, my diary. But I love sending out the pages of my diary and have people do things with them
mm-hmm.
on their own, you know, to make this more meaningful. And that's how this project has grown. It's grown because these children belong to America. These are America's paintings.
Fascinating. Let's talk about a lady. And I found it fascinating because you call her the artist warrior. Her name is Katie Kollwitz.
Yeah, Katie Kollwitz.
Now, you have a quote on the page next to the beginning of the story, and I'm going to read it. Art is a noble mission. Those who have been chosen by destiny to reveal the soul of a people, to let it speak in stone or ring in sounds, live under a powerful, almighty, and all-pervading force. They will speak a language regardless of whether others understand them. They will suffer hardship rather than become unfaithful to the star which guides them from within. I love those words. Then there was the shocker about who said it. Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
Nuremberg speech, September the 11th, 1935. He must have been sane when he was talking that way.
Isn't that amazing? An amazing quote.
Just
it's one of the most phenomenal quotes. Yeah, so inspiring. It's one of the most inspiring quotes about art and artists that I've ever read. And it was spoken by a man who ultimately went on to try and crush
everything.
Expression and to crush artists, to crush culture in every way he had at hand. And it was a reminder to me that sometimes art is used as something you don't expect it. And sometimes governments use art for reasons that create darkness and silence.
The propaganda, right.
As propaganda, oh yeah.
Let's talk about Katie, because this is a woman that lived during this time, expressed herself, and you said your very first exposure to her artwork was a lithograph, A Woman with a Dead Child. Tell us about that.
Well, I was a student, and I was looking at all kinds of art to study, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Raphael, and then I came across a print by Katie Kollwitz, and it is a black and white graphic of a woman cradling in her arms a dead child. And the entire design, if you can imagine it, is almost like a bullseye, a series of concentric circles, or a drop of water hitting a surface of a pond, radiating out. It's this beautiful, flowing design, but also has this sense that it draws you in, and you really feel from this drawing maybe the hollow sense of what it would be like to cradle your own child. And as a father, I hope and pray I never know that experience. But Katie Kollwitz was drawing an image that unfortunately would be very recognizable to millions of mothers on Earth who've lost a child, especially those who've lost a child during a war or a military conflict of great tragedy. And, you know, Katie Kollwitz has a museum. She has two museums, actually. One is in Berlin and one is in Cologne, both in Germany. And they're incredible. Anyone who goes to Germany should find this museum, because this was a not only a woman and a mother, but also an artist who refused to bow down to tyranny. She refused to silence her voice. She refused to make art about anything other than the most urgent feelings that she was feeling in her heart. And, you know, as I talk about in my book, Katie Kollwitz was very famous, very professional in Germany, had a wonderful career. Constantly had situations in her life where she was being thwarted. You know, at one point she won a gold medal, and Kaiser Wilhelm, the leader of the German nation, actually plucked the gold medal from her and said, no, your work is too controversial. I don't want to reward you for that. When the war came to Germany, World War I, she lost her son. When World War II came, Hitler immediately, you know, first thing Adolf Hitler did is he shut down the schools in Germany that taught art. That was the first thing he did. Mm-hmm. He was a frustrated artist himself, and obviously had a bone to pick with the state of the art in Germany. He shut it down and actually made Katie's work illegal. She could not exhibit her work. You know, we can't imagine this in America right now. It sounds like something from some distant time. But, of course, there's countries all over the world where a similar state grips expression. You know, to not be able to show your art, to sing your song, to have your book read is unheard of for us. But this is the great thing that we must always watch for, because I feel that the artist is like the canary in the coal mine. You know, yes. Once the artist starts dropping dead, or the arts start being dismantled, you gotta look out. You gotta look out, not only because of the way art affects people, but because that gives the government a perfect opportunity to maybe step in at the nick of time and rescue things with a price. And with a stranglehold around artists. We have to be careful too.
I mean, the freedom, period. That is a seven-letter word that is so rich with variables. And the freedom of expression and the right to be able to do it. You may not like what somebody does, but you still have the right to do it. And I think that your book, Art and Courage, I know we're just about out of time here, John Paul, but your stories that you've compiled of different artists and expression, your quotes, the involvement you've had with the missing children, the artwork you continue to this day, I think is extremely inspiring to any of us.
Oh, thank you.
that are willing to be open and receptive, recognizing that life is never a straight line. Life is always going to have its ups and its downs. But through art, through music, through expression of the written word, there is that opportunity to be heard. And I think your book is just wonderfully done. I compliment you on it. I think that the face of this little boy on your cover, the artistry that you've expressed here, the feeling and the soulfulness in his eyes, it's just very poignant, and it is great reading. I'd love to see this in every elementary school in the country, because
well,
I think
you.
That kids need to know about this.
Thank you. I do, too. It's not just about the art also. It's about the message that we all have this creativity in us. Sometimes it's the last thing we have that's truly ours. Sometimes we can make a career out of it. Sometimes it is the thing that sustains us.
That's right. Now, if you'd like to go to his website, go to artandcourage.com, artandcourage.com, and you can see for yourself what's there. Don't just take my word for it. And you will be able to find out about all of his activities. You can also go to his website, John Paul Thornton, and that's thornton.com, johnpaulthornton.com. John Paul, again, I want to thank you so much for being my guest. It has been an absolute delight having you with me today, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you so much, Donna. It's been a real pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, well, we've got more good things to share with you. So stay with us so you can find out what they are. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you're able to join me today. The telephone number to call into, yes, phone lines are open, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Call me at 888-815-9756. Now, I know we've got a caller on the line, but I want to give it out to you, 888-815-9756. And I've got so many things to share with you, but we're going to take this caller first so that you'll see how it's done. And then I'll share with you some good information and also something that you may not be expecting, and that's a recipe for watermelon. Yes, yes, yes. There are actually recipes for watermelon. Didn't you just want this for your entire life? Okay, let's go to our first caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Rose from Gary, Indiana.
Gary, Indiana. Oh,
yes.
My goodness. You were made famous by Oklahoma.
I just said about Kaiser Wilhelm.
Yes.
He was supposedly buried in a rather ancient cemetery here and was affiliated as a spy at the Gary, Indiana steel mills many years ago.
Amazing. Is that all documented?
Yes. Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
Wow.
And it was just, you know, I don't believe in coincidences, okay? It was just dynamic to hear him say something about Kaiser Wilhelm. This is the first time I've tuned into your radio show.
Oh, I'm so delighted you've been able to join us. This young man, John Paul, if you can get his book, Art and Courage, the stories in the book about people, and especially about him dealing with the painting of portraits, I'm telling you, he gives an inside track on art that really is terrific. And I think every young person should be made aware of things like this, because we need to remember that these are integral parts of human expression. And so many times you can get an insight into people and into what's really going on because of their work.
Yes, yes, that's very true. Well, you know, the children of today are the future, are our future of tomorrow.
Well, I'll rephrase that a little bit. The children of today are the creators of their future tomorrow.
And
my and my feeling is, as adults, we have the responsibility to, one, be a good example to them, and two, to be supportive of them, to be willing to take the risks, to dare to be the real individuals they are, because it takes guts. There aren't any shortcuts. There's no magic wand. They're going to have to live life just like the rest of us. But their life is going to be evolving into something that we wouldn't, you know, I think of my grandmother. I can remember watching her when she was 92 years old. She was born in 1900. And I can remember watching her and just laughing to myself, saying, here's grandmother born in 1900 out on a farm in the middle of Virginia land, and they had absolutely no technology to speak of, really, out there on that farm, buggy days. And here I'm watching her on the phone at 92, considered legally blind, and she's holding up this modern-day phone to her ear and saying, excuse me, I've got to put you on hold. I have another call coming in. I mean,
oh,
I love
gosh.
That.
Oh, my gosh. My mom, my grandmother, grandfather, all of them came from Pennsylvania, so we're kind of close kin.
Oh, my goodness. But in her lifetime.
Yes.
In her lifetime. And you think of the people that have been born in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, and look at how much technology has changed just in the last 20 years. We have children that are born in the 2000 new millennia, and their thinking is so far out because of what they are, what's in their environment. And again, this is just me, Donna, tooting her horn. I really think it behooves
us. Well, Donna, I think the worst thing about it is there's so many people in the world today, adults, who are afraid of technology and new technologies. And it's unfortunate. Risk. Take a chance, you know. You never know what you can gain.
Well, that is true. And also, another aspect is that if we will share with them our stories, what we saw and what we observed, they will then be able, they can learn. And it doesn't mean we know everything. Far from it. But it may inspire them. It may inspire them. But if they don't hear the stories, how can they be inspired?
I have to ask you, are you giving psychic impressions today?
I sure am. Would you like one?
Yes, I'm concerned regarding my son's employment.
Don't be.
There was a downsizing, and he's now seeking a job.
All right. Now, where is he located?
Yeah, near Gary, Indiana.
All right. He's going to have a challenge near Gary. Now, there is some employment that's going to be available to him. It's either in 2 to 3 months. So he's going to have to get out and hustle. But this is a good time for him, believe it or not. He really needs to sit down and do something he's been procrastinating on for a long time. And that is, where does he really want to be? What kind of an environment does he want to find himself in? and he needs to think outside the box, because he may have to leave this area to find what he'd really like to be a part of. There is going to be an opportunity for him to go and work, but I don't see joy when I'm seeing him working. I feel like it's labor intensive, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's as if when I finish, I just feel like a part of my heart has been cut away. So I think that, yes, he should continue to work, but he needs to be able to really ask himself, what kind of an environment does he
want? He's had an offer in Colorado, and he doesn't want to leave the home and family. He's also going through a divorce right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, he emotionally it's been very hard on him. The layoffs came very unexpectedly, and right now he's awaiting word on a position that's supposed to be being made, a new position, within the government facilities.
Well,
and
I wouldn't hold my breath
they told
on that
him
one.
That should start around August the 1st. Now, he's had the interview and felt it was very successful, as others have told me it was successful. So we're really awaiting that.
Now, is this the position in Colorado?
No, this is the one locally.
All right. I would not hold my breath on that. And
okay.
That's okay. I would say fine. But I would say whatever goes, take it. Even if this is a Colorado positioning, and I'll tell you why. Because he's in the divorce, he is not really thinking that clearly. So I understand the economic positioning. I understand the concern about possible separation, but that's going to happen anyway. He really needs to be true to himself, and this is the time to think things through. And I know when you're going through a divorce, everything gets pretty mucked up. But
right.
I will tell you that he is going to do very well if he will just take time to put on his thinking cap, if it means he goes out and walks by himself for, 5 miles. And just, he has to get the cobwebs out of his head. The divorce is a very good thing in many levels. It's going to be tough to a degree, but it really is something that's bringing closure that needs to be closed. So this is something, it's not unhealthy, but it's like anything else. We procrastinate and we don't want to look at things with clear eyes. That's what he needs to do.
There's no chance for the local job to come through?
The chance is there, but I'm seeing some questioning about finances, and I'm looking at somebody elbowing into a positioning that is not expected. So I don't know exactly what's happening here, but I would say do what you have to do, and if you can take the job in Colorado, I just think it'd be wonderful for him. I think he'd love the environment. I know he'd miss family. But I'll tell you what, I think that he's breaking into a whole new life. And this is going to be the beginning step. So I would say whatever opens up, step into it and realize that you're in this transition for a reason. And it's going to turn out so good for him. But if he looks at it and looks at his circumstances, and he has integrity with himself, he's going to come out smelling like a rose.
Thank you.
You're very
welcome,
Rose.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for calling in.
Okay, thanks.
This
Bye.
Is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for a moment, and when we come back, you can call in also 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497.
1997. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. I want to give you a heads up on my guests that are going to be with me next week. Yes, I know that this is Friday, and I'm so delighted you've been able to join me. We're going to be talking about angel animals, or animal angels. We'll reverse it there. And this is going to be great. Michael Rebel is going to be my guest. Also, we're going to be talking about safe hormones, smart women on Tuesday. This is a powerfully informative book. Gals, there is hope. You don't have to suffer in misery. And then we're going to be talking about Zen women. This is a work that took the woman that wrote it 10 years to do it. These are women that in history books will never be mentioned, but they had a powerful impact on the culture. And we're going to be talking about women of different cultures. Then also we're going to be talking about crash when UFOs fall from the sky. That's going to be next Thursday. And then Barry Weiner, Kevin Randall, is going to be talking about the UFOs. And then Barry Weiner has written a book called CYA. Now, this is a book that he published. His father actually wrote the book before he died. And Barry is honoring his dad. He was a former New York police officer. And this is his dad's story. So we've got a dynamic week. And I would invite you to invite your friends because I think we've got a lot to share here. It's an absolute joy to be able to do this show on a daily basis, and I had to chuckle because I had someone that had come to see me today for a private session, and of course I've got books all over the place. When you review 400 to 600 books a year, and I actually read them before I book a guest, then you have a few laying around, and of course I've got a work table where I have at any given time anywhere from 10 to 50 books sitting on my table that I have to get in order. And so I put some up on a shelf-like area, and I apologized for the way that it looked. And they said, well, you got to have some place to work, and this is exactly how I thought it would all look like. And I just had to chuckle. But it's so important to be able to share the talents of good people. We hear so much about what's wrong with the world that we forget that it's a very tiny majority that's creating all the misery. Very, very tiny. I used the wrong word. I said a tiny majority. Well, they seem like a majority, don't they? You listen to the news programs, you listen to all of this, and there's all this hype about particular individuals. What if they didn't get the hype? What if they didn't get the coverage? Would they still be as intent on getting that coverage as they are. Regardless, it's a small minority of people on this total planet that can create misery for billions. So it's up to us to be able to speak about those people who day by day are living their truth, they're living their life, they're not out there banging pans, they're out there contributing to the betterment of life. And that's what my guests and so many of my guests are doing from all walks of life. Male, female, age doesn't make a difference. I've had 10-year-olds on my show that are writers, that are really doing things that make a difference. So it's who you are that makes the difference. What you do is significant, but it's who you are at your core that creates the ripple of positive effect that goes out and touches who knows who or how it can affect them. Just being yourself, being the best you can be, makes a difference. I wanted to share something with you. For any of you that may know of people that have had heart problems, and I've known a number of them through the years. In fact, I had a very dear friend that passed away from something that had to do with electrical storms in the heart. And at the time when this was affecting him, they didn't have very much information. Well, here we have something today that has been approved by the FDA. It's called HeartMate 2. And this is a new heart pump. And they are hoping that this is going to dramatically improve the odds of survival for patients who are so sick because of a bad heart that they can't get a transplant. Now, this is something that's implanted, and I've got a diagram in front of me. It's implanted into a patient's abdomen, and it's driven by a turbine engine the size of a D battery. Now, when you hear the term a turbine engine, you see something big, don't you, in your mind? Well, think of one that's the size of a D battery. Now, what does it do? It routes oxygen or oxygenated blood from the heart, which is not in real good shape, it's weak, through the turbine to the rest of the body. Now, this is what they've had as a result so far. I think it's going to be refined even more. They've done clinical trials, and people that have been very, very ill that could not withstand a heart transplant, they ended up living 2 years longer than normal. And there is a physician, Joseph Rogers of Duke University, that worked on the study and wrote about it. He said, we can now take patients who previously had no options for treatment and help them feel well and live longer. He doesn't talk about any of the medications that would have to be administered. But hold this in your mind. This is a concept that one day would be totally positive by a chip or two, running something that would not be considered invasive by the body. It takes the minds of people who can think outside of the box, working with a human body in a way that's harmonious, that is enabling us to have a better quality of life in many instances. And there's always a learning curve. There's no quick fix here. But I also go back to the basics as well, and that is you have to take care of your chassis. If you don't take care of this physical vehicle that you're occupying, then it's going to have serious breakdowns. How many of you have seen classic cars and you just ooh and aah over them because they're so gorgeous? Well, they've been taken care of. And parts break down. Parts have to be made because maybe they're not being made anymore. But someone says this purrs like a kitten when you get it out on the road. And you'll have this antique vehicle and you go, my goodness, this is marvelous. It's because it was well taken care of. And perhaps, maybe they got it as a piece of junk and totally rebuilt it. So you can do the same thing for your own physical wellness. Take charge, become educated, be willing to learn. That's a wonderful part of life. You're never too old to learn something new, ever. You're never too young, either. Nobody gets there knowing it all. It's not possible. Well, this is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. I'm so delighted you were able to share the day with me. Thank you very much. And I look forward to spending time with you again next week, same time, same place, right here on VBSRadio.com. This is Donna. Have an awesome, awesome weekend. Talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.